south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
Details, details. You know, I come from a family where details meant a lot. You know, that 100% German heritage. Man, I'll tell you, my aunt's houses, my grandma's house, my mother, all my relatives, man, you could walk into their houses and everything was neat as a pin. Do they still use that phrase, neat as a pin? What makes a pin so neat? I'll never know. And, you know, I had some very capable uncles, do-it-yourselfers too. They like to build and fix things. They'd tackle anything. If they took apart a motor, let's say, they'd have it all laid out and labeled perfectly on the floor or on a table. I'll never forget going over to my uncle's house. He was building a garage, tinkering away at it on weekends himself, so it probably took him about 3-4 months to build. Anyway, he insulated it like a house. You know how you walk into a garage, you see the studs and everything? Well, you couldn't see him in his garage because he put insulation in the walls and covered the inside with paneling. Not drywall, but very nice, real oak paneling. Much nicer than the interior of many houses I've seen. And this is a garage we're talking about, with wainscoting, a nice drop ceiling, electrical outlets everywhere. And I remember going over there, I must have been around 11 or 12, when he was putting up the paneling. And I noticed that inside the walls, you know, where the studs are and the wiring and all that, stuff that's going to be completely covered with paneling. You'll never see it again. Well, it didn't matter that you'd never see it, that it was going to be covered up permanently. All the wires and holes and stud framing were just perfect, meticulous. I mean, he laid it out like a piece of art to be viewed by everyone who walked in, but it was never going to be seen again. I always wondered, what was he thinking? That maybe someday in the future, 50, 100 years, or even 10,000 years from now, when alien historians arrive and excavate things and find my uncle was no slacker to posterity? So that's the kind of family I grew up around. Everyone was into details. Well, not everyone. I had an Uncle Bernie. Brilliant guy. Unbelievably bright and successful. Was my godfather and confirmation sponsor, so I had lots of nice long talks with him. Was a terrible pack rat, though. He was the guy I first learned the word libertarianism from. Anyway, he was a pack rat, never threw anything away. You walked into his house, it was like a maze of newspapers, articles, journals, but organized, really organized in his own crazy way. In other words, it wasn't like one of those reality shows where they visit a guy's house and he hasn't ever thrown anything away, including food and empty cans. My uncle went to extreme details on his pack rat obsession, but he never let the varmints or cucarachas invade. Oh, and my dad, he was into extreme details too. In fact, my mother told me just recently, he was such a good artist that he got a full-boat scholarship to the Art Institute of Chicago, but didn't go because he was more into sports and decided first to go into the army. I found out he played the violin, the harmonica, and could really paint. You know, like portraits and stuff. But he never really cared to do it. Not in front of us kids, anyway. Instead, he was nuts about sports. So all we know growing up was that he was sports crazy and good at it. And only once at a wedding, I remember someone persuaded him to get up on stage with the band and play the harmonica. He killed him that night. Big surprise, too, because we never saw him do that before or since. Now, while in the Army, he was such a good sportsman. He played on the Army-Navy basketball team. Played against all the European teams, the Russian teams. And get this, when he got out of the Army, he played a couple of years professional baseball in the States on AAA, I think, but he only lasted a couple of years. Enough to get a baseball card out of it, though. Came back to Chicago, worked a factory job, and as mentioned, to get extra money, he painted houses in the summertime. I used to watch him. He taught me about painting, house painting, that is. I had no talent for any other kind of painting. He said, Johnny, always have a roll of masking tape on you. But he never did. I said, fine, but how come you don't have any then? He said, because I don't need it. And man, he didn't. He was the only guy I ever met who could paint freehand like a virtual robot, like a machine. He could draw or paint a perfectly straight line with his eyes closed. Never had that gift myself. I used to watch him paint and repaint perfect lines around window frames and never touch the glass. You know those edges where walls meet other walls or a wall meets a ceiling? He could draw that line freehand, and it would look like he did it with a ruler. Oh, and he always taught me to have a drop cloth around, too, for spatters and specks, but he didn't need one. He always had one in the trunk of his car, but he never pulled it out. Never needed to use one. So then what does that have to do with living, working, playing, and or doing business in Latin America? Well, I have to tell you, for guys like me who grew up like that, watching everyone around you doing such detailed work like it was normal, like that was everyday life. That said, and for me anyway, one of the hardest humps to get over here in Latin America is seeing the lack of detail practically everywhere. Now, of course, when you're visiting an old Spanish colonial church or cathedral, there's evidence everywhere of fantastic detail and craftsmanship. But all that's from a bygone era, the European influence. Those guys operated under a completely different set of standards. Now, I'm not implying that everything construction-wise built after the Spanish colonial era is essentially crude or built like crap, that none of the structures are built or finished to high standards. But man, on first glance, you could certainly make a case for it. Just keep in mind that in the past 10 or 20 years, pretty much all U.S. American franchises have landed. Of course, that forced a lot of Latin American construction companies to adapt to higher standards. Chuck E. Cheese, McDonald's, Subway, Gold's Gym, TGIF, Starbucks, Walmart, Costco, and on and on. Those buildings had to be built to exacting first world standards. And with the arrival of all that first world influence, good or bad, all those buildings and all the infrastructure and all the people trained at those places have now learned that walls have to be straight, paint goes on walls and is not to be spattered on floors or windows. Plumbing pipes have to be sized right and must not leak. Cucarachas must not be allowed to set up shop and windows must not have cracks in them. So, slowly but surely, in many aspects of Latino life, American-style details are starting to creep in. I have to admit, it has been getting better over the last couple of decades, but it still is very hit and miss. Not hit and miss at those American franchises. They still have U.S. standards. I'm talking about everywhere else. For example, just the other day, a gringo friend of mine said, "Johnny, I've been looking at apartments, townhouses, and condominiums. I've decided to buy," he says. "I'm sick of renting." He said, "I've narrowed it down to two places. Would you come on over and have a look? Let me know if you see any fatal flaws, etc." I said, "Sure, why not?" First stop, a condominium in a brand new residential tower. The realtor met us in the lobby. We had to check in with the guard. First thing I noticed, and remember, we're talking about a brand new residential tower. The elevator, the brand new stainless steel elevator, had a big scratch in the front door. Someone was moving furniture or something and gouged the hell out of that beautiful stainless steel door. Now, I'll be willing to bet if I come back a year later, that gouge will still be there. Should that be the first thing you see when you're looking to rent or buy an apartment? So we get in the elevator, right up to the sixth floor. Guess what? There's no movement of air in that elevator. No fan. Well, I'm sure it did have a fan. All elevators do to keep the circulation going, but this one didn't. Obviously, there was something wrong here. So anyway, exiting the elevator on the sixth floor, I noticed right away the hallway was lit with the lowest wattage light bulbs in the universe. How depressing is that? Like walking through a dungeon or a morgue. So anyway, the realtor took out the key. We went into the apartment. It was pretty high-end, actually. Had real hardwood floors and hardwood doors. Solid. A very good sign. Nice solid hardware on the doors, too. Hinges, knobs, nice first world quality. Then we walked into the kitchen where I saw four glaring defects you only see in low-end crap homes up in the States. Starting with a cheap-ass stainless steel sink with no-name Chinese faucets. First thing I did was walk over to the sink, grab the spout on that faucet, started to wiggle it back to front a bit, and I showed my buddy and the realtor that the sink was so thin of such crap quality, it would start flexing. And I said to him and the realtor, "This is crap, you know." The realtor just shrugged and gave no reply. Figures, they don't care. They just want to sell or rent the place. All right, so then, 3 feet away was the next obvious defect. Right on the wall next to the refrigerator was the circuit breaker panel for the house. Now, in an upscale home especially, you hide that thing in a utility room or in a closet. You don't have it sticking out in your face in the kitchen. No way, no class. A big gray square panel metal box, something to stare at every time you go to the refrigerator, ugly as sin. It didn't even have the normal breaker cover door on it. It was missing. I was thinking the only way to hide that ugly thing would be to hang a picture over it. Oh, and that's not all. It was mounted slightly crooked, off kilter, not quite parallel to the ceiling or floor. Now, maybe that would be all right in a double-wide trailer, space considerations and all, but in a brand new upscale apartment, I don't think so. Except, of course, in the third world, like Latin America. Then we walked into the maid's quarters, which, by the way, is always furnished downscale from anything else in the house. You know, smaller toilet, smaller sink. I did point out to my buddy that the faucet on that sink was pure plastic, the worst, cheapest kind of Chinese crap you could buy. Real junk. I said, you know, if you do have a cleaning lady, that's the first thing that it's going to leak or break. It's like a toy, a solid piece of plastic that looks like chromed metal from a distance. But it ain't. Just pure junk, chrome-plated plastic. I don't get it. For an extra 10 or 15 bucks, the builder could have bought a metal faucet that would last a lifetime, not a month, a week, or a year. Details, details. Then after we walked through the bedrooms and such, we went to the nicest part of the apartment, the outside balcony. Beautiful view of the terrain and mountains. Space for four, maybe even six patio chairs and a couple of end tables. Now, remember, we're up six flights in the air, so it's a balcony that's extending over the main frame of the building. Every apartment has one, all the way up to the eighth floor. That's when I noticed at my feet a permanent gray stain in the corner of the white tile. I know what that meant. They pitched the angle of the tile wrong. The drainage was all f***ed up, so that when it rains, the water doesn't go down the little drain grate. Most of it does, of course, but the rest puddles up in the corner and has got nowhere to go until the sun comes out, and after a few hours or so, it finally evaporates. Maybe. And after weeks and months of that. Thus, leaving a permanent watermark that can't even be scrubbed off. And to fix that, man, that's a big job. You have to tear up the tile and repitch the concrete slab and put the tile back down. So anyway, if I had to make a list of all the defects I saw. Now, remember, this is a brand new apartment. And how many unacceptable details I encountered. I'd have to admit that if I ever bought that place, it would take me a couple of weeks to get it ship-shaped to my standards anyway. With the only real serious thing being that water drainage problem. But really, who in their right mind would sell a place with those defects and call it brand new and advertise that it was in perfect shape? Not to mention, 9 out of 10 of those defects are easy to fix. Obviously, it's because Latinos are used to it. Those little errors and details that we notice are not even on their radar. Now, honestly, these days, when I walk into a place and see that kind of stuff, I no longer think to myself, what a bunch of fools and idiots. How do they live this way? Instead, my mind sort of kicks into a kinder, more tolerant, zen kind of mode. I'm thinking, this ain't right. How would I fix this if I lived here? I don't get judgmental like I used to do. In other words, I'm not trying to be a critic. I'm thinking about possible solutions, even though I know it's an exercise in futility. So anyway, after seeing that place, I went with my gringo buddy to see apartment or house number two. In fact, it was a house. Three bedrooms, three baths, a garden, an attached garage in a gated, guarded community. Now, on the ride over, the realtor said the house was 5 years old. The owners had moved to the United States, so they were selling it, though they'd completely remodeled it just 2 or 3 months earlier in order to make it fresh and modern and like new when they put it up for sale. And when we pulled up to the place and walked in, he was absolutely right. The place was completely repainted. You could smell it. You know, it takes a couple of weeks for that smell to go away. And when I say the place was completely repainted, I mean it. Not only had they painted the walls, ceilings, closets, etc., there was paint on the windows, on some of the light fixtures, overspray spots on the countertops from using a roller too aggressively. There was even an outline in paint of a half a footprint on the back porch. Obviously, no drop cloths or masking tape in their painter's armamentarium. Now, it's not that. I haven't seen that kind of sloppy work a million times before. But what really set this place apart, and how the painters excelled in carelessness, was the fact that in the garage, which they'd also painted too, I noticed up in the corner what I first thought was a camera, or home security sensor, that the painters painted right over. I thought, man, I've seen a lot of sloppy paint jobs, but this one takes the cake. But I was wrong. When I got up closer to it, I noticed it was, in actuality, a small wasp's nest about the size of a ping pong ball that was completely painted over with the same color as the rest of the ceiling and walls. It was a dormant nest for sure. There were no wasps buzzing around, but I could see the little holes where, you know, wasps lay their eggs. They were all filled in with paint, too. Now, that takes a painter of an altogether different class, don't you think? And you know, in seeing that, I just had to pull out my camera. Do I need to continue with the story? Do I need to go on? I know. You're thinking, which of those two places did my buddy end up buying? Well, I don't know. He's still dickering back and forth about the price. I'll let you know. So we're talking about details. Bottom line is, attention to detail is what makes for great products, great innovations, great inventions, great first impressions, or lack thereof. And though Latinos and Latinas are certainly capable of becoming what they call in Spanish, detallistas, which means a person whose deeds show great attention to detail. And I've met a few, not a lot, but a few. Though, as a rule, the whole Latino culture seems to be missing that gene. Is it any surprise that when a bunch of gringos and expats get together, coffee clutching or whatever, inevitably, someone will say, "You'll never believe what I just saw." Or, "I walked into this guy's garage or kitchen or bathroom and saw this or that." How can they put up with that? Whatever it is that you wouldn't tolerate yourself. Why don't they just do something about X or Y or Z? I hear that from gringos and expats all the time. Well, you know, the longer you're down here, the less stuff like that surprises you. And my answer is always, get used to it. Why do you think they call it the third world? Oh, wait a minute, I'm sorry, I'm not supposed to say that. You know, third world, or in Spanish, tercer mundista, is now considered racist, you know. By first world white people, of course. In fact, not so long ago, I was scolded by a snot-nosed American University student rich girl. She said, "You can't say that, it's racist." She said, "It's not the third world, it's the developing world." I said, "Excuse me, you mean to say it's undeveloped, like your brain?" Well, needless to say, she sneered at me, and if looks could kill. By the way, when I first got down here to Latin America, the very first apartment I moved into, there was an old-time gringo. Actually, he was a British guy, but they used to call him the gringo, since he was the only gringo in the complex till I came along. Anyway, we'd have coffee in a nearby restaurant once in a while, and since I'd just arrived, I was green and fresh. He used to give me tips on how us foreigners should handle ourselves in Latin America, you know, with the local population and all that. The do's and don'ts of the culture, how to make friends, how not to make enemies. I'll never forget one of the first tips he gave me. He said, "If you call in a repairman, plumber, guy to fix your dishwasher, your garbage disposal, whatever," he said, "they'll come with a minimum amount of tools, and you won't believe they can get the job done, but they will. And when they tell you what it costs, when they give you the bill, you won't believe it. It'll seem so cheap. But," he said, "there'll be another price to pay. You'll have to clean up after them. They'll make such a mess, leave dirt, dust, and grimy fingerprints all over the place. You won't say a thing about it to them either." Thinking, the cheap price more than makes up for the inconvenience of the mess they made. However, he said, "in time, that gets old. Just be prepared with a broom, a dustbin, and a mop, because," he said, "I've yet to see a single one clean up after himself." Oh, and he also said, "you'd do yourself a service by carrying a big old beach towel in your car. Threadbare, tattered, and torn, it doesn't matter." I said, "You mean for the beach?" He said, "Nope, when you go to the beach, you just rent beach chairs, $5 a day." He said, "What I'm talking about is when you go to the mechanic shop for an oil change, to get your brakes adjusted, whatever. You take that old beach towel and you cover up your driver's seat. Cover it good. Because that mechanic with his dirty, greasy hands and overalls is going to make a damn mess out of your front seat, guaranteed." And man, was that old timer spot on. What I have noticed, though, if you go to a bona fide car dealership, like a Toyota, Nissan, whatever, to get something done on your car, maybe you bought it new so it's under warranty, or you're in for scheduled maintenance. Well, because car dealerships are international franchises, they'll take care of the customer just like they do up in the States. Before they even start working on your car, they'll put a plastic cover over your seats, a cloth protector on the painted fender when they open up your hood, so the mechanic doesn't lean on it and scratch it with his belt buckle or place tools on it and scratch it. In other words, at a real bona fide dealership, there's great attention to details. But do take into account that any other street mechanic you go to, he will not treat your car with kid gloves like a dealership mechanic's been trained to do. And for sure, the guy will charge a half or maybe even a quarter of the price of a regular dealership. He'll get the job done all right, but when you get your car back, there's no guarantee you'll get it back in the same condition you left it. Cosmetically, that is. Personally, I've learned the hard way that when you give a Latino the keys to your car, whether it's valet parking or giving it to a mechanic to change your tires or just bringing your car through a car wash, it's always a little cringy for me. Speaking of car washes, You know, most places you park on the street, if you sit around long enough, a little guy will run up to you with a bucket of water and offer to wash your car for $2 or $3. Nothing wrong with that, but you got to know most times they're recycling that same bucket of water throughout the day. Most of those little guys on the street do not have easy access to a constant supply of water. So they make do with the few gallons they scrounge up in the morning. Nothing wrong with that. They seem to get the job done. But personally, I'd never let one of those guys work on the inside of my car. Not those little street guys with the buckets. Oh, they'll offer to do the inside all right. Might cost you an extra buck or two. Just think about it. They don't have access to electricity, and none of them have a vacuum cleaner. So just how are they going to get all the dust and garbage out of your car? They can't. Besides that, they're just little guys working for cash on the street. You trust one of those guys inside your car? I repeat, it's okay to let them wash the outside, but to let them inside, bad move. Now, it's a different story completely when you're talking about an organized car wash that's an actual business. It's been there for a long time. They've got vacuum cleaners, the works, high-pressure sprayers, a place for you to sit down and have a coffee, whatever. So in that case, you can trust those guys to do the outside and inside of your car. They've been trained up and don't leave any telltale marks or scratches or garbage around. But you'll have to give the head guy, the guy with the clipboard, the jefe, the keys to your car, and he's going to drive it in and out of a stall or two. But not to worry, with most of these operations, it's just one guy, the guy with the clipboard, and he's got nice clean clothes on. He's the only guy that will drive your car or sit in the front seat. The rest of the team, there might be 5 or 10 of those guys, are all scruffy and dirty and wet and, well, you know, they're the grunt workers, and they will not be sitting in your car. Of course, they'll open your doors and dip in and out of it to clean it, but they'll always have their waterlogged shoes and boots firmly on the ground outside, not in your car. I've seen them. They're careful, since lots of nice cars are coming in and out. So then what does one of those deluxe car washes set you back? Well, the full works in and out usually around $6 to $10. Of course, they will try to upsell you with sprays and waxes and chamois cloths, all that. I never bite. I know better. But man, I'll tell you, when I'm sitting there for an hour watching my car get done and other cars going in and out, I've noticed a great majority of ladies get suckered into the upsell. I'm talking about when a lone lady brings her car in for a wash. From what I can see, they look like easy marks. They buy the liquid wax and the water repellent spray for your windshield, all that junk that really doesn't work. Whereas male drivers aren't that quick to jump on it. By the way, more and more I'm seeing these automatic car washes, usually built adjacent to or even as part of a Shell or a Texaco station. Of course, those things have been around up in the States and Canada, etc. for what, 40, 50 years now? However, the difference here in Latin America is, when you drive out, there's a couple of guys standing there with chamois and they dry your car off completely. That means no water spots on the paint job or windshield. All right, moving on. You know, a lot could be said about the way gringos and expats slaughter the Spanish language. I know when I first got down here and was practicing my Spanish on people, I made a fool of myself many a time. But hey, no matter how bad you think your Spanish is, eventually you give it the old college try and you start practicing on people, whether they laugh at you or not. And most of the time when you find the person you're talking to is just not getting it, they got that quizzical look on their face, you repeat yourself or you say it louder like that's going to help. And what makes it so problematic when you're first starting out fumbling along is that so many Spanish words sound similar but have completely different, even opposite meanings. Happens in English too, every language. Like for example, in English, the word to, T-O, T-O-O and T-W-O. The meaning is all in the spelling, but they all sound exactly the same. Obvious, right? Well, to us. Thing is, that happens all the time in Spanish too, and especially when you're first starting to speak in Spanish, you can get caught up in that and not even know it. Here's a few examples. The word tercero sounds a lot like the word trasero. The first word, tercero, means the third, T-H-I-R-D. The second one, trasero, means rear end, as in ass. How about this one? The word peine means comb, like combing your hair. And pene means penis. Pene, peine. Believe me, you don't want to get tripped up with that one, but you just might. And here's one that'll get you all the time. A malecón is a boardwalk in any Latin country that's alongside the ocean or the sea. That's malecón. Whereas a maricón is a gay guy. Malecón, maricón. Here's another word that'll screw up a beginner. The word cocina is kitchen. The word cochina means dirty, like piggy. Cochina, cocina. Oh, and this next one will trip you up too. If you're hungry, in Spanish you say, tengo hambre. literally means I have hunger. Again, that's tengo hambre. If you say tengo hambre, which sounds so similar, that means I have a man. Now, the word for fear in Spanish is miedo, miedo. Very similar to the word mierda, which means poop. Though I guess if you were walking around outside barefoot, you would fear poop. Speaking of fear, you know, when a Latino goes to see a scary movie, he says, I'm going to see a película de miedo, meaning a fear flick. Though a gringo might say, because his Spanish sucks, I'm going to go see a película de mierda, which technically means I'm going to see a shit movie. A lot of that going around these days. Then there's that universal word dollar, you know, U.S. dollar. In Spanish, it's dólar, which is very similar to the word for pain, dolor. Oh, and did you know the word for groin, you know, getting kicked in the groin in Spanish is inglés? And if it's got an S at the end of it, it's inglés, which is the language we're speaking right now, English. Now, admittedly, for almost all gringos and expats whose second language is Spanish, one of the toughest things they have to do is learn how to roll their R's. Some of us never get it right. And if you can't do it, at least try to give it a shot. It'll solve a lot of lost in translation problems. For example, the word pero in Spanish, P-E-R-O, means but. You know, but this or but that. Not the rear end but, that's culo or trasero. You'll find yourself using the word pero, P-E-R-O, pero, a lot. But, pero, you should never confuse the word pero with perro, which means dog. Roll in those R's. But some gringos, living down here a long, long time, just can never get the hang of rolling those R's. So the word pero, P-E-R-O, which means but, is much different from P-E-R-R-O. Double R means roll the R's. Perro. Perro. All right, we're getting towards the end of the show now. You know, I always like to end the show on a happy note. Like, for example, today, the good news comes out of Mexico's largest newspaper. It says, according to Mexican research firm Laboratorio Electoral, just since last June 2023, 16 political candidates have been murdered in election-related violence in Mexico, with the most recent murders being last Monday, when two mayoral hopefuls were murdered on the same day in Morovito, Mexico, in the western state of Michoacán. So there we have it, 16 politicians killed in Mexico in the last 7 or 8 months. You know what I'd call that? A good start.
South of the border. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.